the last section of the chapter on supramental sense is highly interesting because it largely deals with what are called psychic powers, powers of clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsense, miracles, materialization, and all these which are very dazzling to the modern man and have been taken up as subjects for research in some of the universities in the West. Because we do not have institutions carrying on research in these subjects in the East, because there they do not excite the same response in the East as they do in the West. In the West they have developed the logical and scientific frame of mind which feels challenged when these miracles and things outside the purview of physical science take place. But in the East, they have always been accepted as part of life, though it is known that only those who are advanced in their consciousness, who are nearer the God level, that they alone can operate these miracles, and also those who are specially adepts, who have qualified themselves by training or by favor of God or gods. So it is taken for granted that miracles happen and they are a fact of life. In what way are they a fact of life? That is the question. Sri Aurobindo points out that when the inner consciousness opens and the psychic being starts blossoming, its consciousness awakes many of the latent powers in the subliminal, in the inner mental, and even the vital being, forces which are not easily seen or experienced in physical life at the physical level. They come into operation and we see things happening which are new. For instance, a man whose psychic consciousness is awakening and which consciousness exerts a pressure upon the subliminal or the inner being, he may suddenly feel that intuitions, thought reading, premonitions, all these may start happening in him. They are not miracles, Sri Aurobindo points out, but they are the logical consequences of certain powers and faculties which have come into operation. These powers are there on all the levels of the being, the mind, the life part, otherwise called the vital, the physical body, and behind the subliminal. And from anywhere these forces may begin to operate and lead to results which are what are called abnormal or extraordinary. But these results are not exactly as they should be. A particular force, a particular faculty or power coming into operation from within, it should lead to a certain result. But normally, it does not. It gets deformed, it gets reduced, it gets exaggerated in certain ways. And this is due to the interference of our own grosser parts, our ego, our desire, our prejudice, likes and dislikes, prejudices, wants, all these subconsciously coat the experience and turn it into something totally different from what it should have been. This danger is very much present in the early stages when the inner ranges are opened. And if a person, the seeker, has not taken pains to purify himself, to vacate these elements of impurity, elements of dilution and deflection and deviation, then there are exaggerated consequences. Person may lose his head and land to in quite a different direction instead of the spiritual. That is why our ancients always made it a rule that he who seeks God shall not cultivate these powers, and even if these powers manifest on their own, he shall not cultivate them, he shall not take notice of them, he shall not indulge them. They made an absolute rule. That is another exaggeration. If one takes care to keep the discrimination, to eliminate beforehand these offending elements, diluting or deforming elements like desire and ego and ambition, and when the experiences take place, is vigilant enough to prevent these things from entering from the back door or any door, then this rule does not apply. It is not something, these powers, the manifestation of these latent powers is not something that is unnatural, anti-divine. In fact, it is natural at that level, as natural when that consciousness blossoms, as our hearing or seeing or touching with our physical senses today in our present state of consciousness. The point is, as soon as the psychic consciousness opening out exerts its influence of touch upon the subliminal or the inner levels of the being, these latent powers, forces begin to come into operation. We begin to hear what is normally we would not hear by the physical eye, physical ear, begin to see beyond the physical sight, and so on. They are not something extraordinary. These things do not require a high degree of spirituality. All that is required is there should be a predisposition in the person towards these occult manifestations. There are many yogis, many seekers who have not had these experiences at all. They go ahead deepening their consciousness, purifying themselves, arriving at an increasing identity with the Divine, without having a single occult experience of this type. They do not see a single vision. They do not hear a single mystic, what are called mystic sounds. But on that account, we shall not say that they are not progressing. The progress is the progress of consciousness. All these may be called fireworks. With or without fireworks, the progress continues. And it is this zone what Sri Aurobindo calls elsewhere, the intermediate zone, where the seeker, the yogin, has to be doubly careful to see that the working of these powers is not reflected. The things are kept in their proper perspective. One does not become big spiritually by the fact that these occult power, what are called occult powers, are functioning. Another result of the psychic opening is the range of experience becomes illimitable. Today, the range of our experience is limited to the range of our physical senses. We may enlarge it with the help of certain physical instruments like telescopes, instruments for hearing and so on. There is the development, the spontaneous development of the psychic sense is more important. Just as we have a physical sense, we spoke the other day of a vital sense. Similarly, there is what is called the psychic sense. And the psychic sense operates through the eye, through the ear, through touch, through all the five faculties. Only the psychic sense does not have to use the physical organs. When the psychic sight is open, one can see things across the wall. One can see things, say, 1,000 miles away from here. One may actually see what is happening physically, or in the screen of ether before the psychic sight, the images appear. That also is possible. This fact that there is a psychic ether, a mental ether, on which all this activity goes on, that should be noted. And this is called Chittakash. Akasha is the ether, spread of ether, and that contains impresses or transcriptions of things that have happened on earth, that are happening, and that may happen. All these things are there either in the form of transcriptions or impresses. And when the psychic sight opens, one sees them effortlessly. Now this is not confined to impresses from the earth scenery. It can as well be from the various planes of existence that overtop and surround the earth world. From there also, these transcriptions can come. One may see what is happening, say, on the subtle physical plane, and know beforehand what it indicates, what things are preparing there to precipitate themselves in the physical universe. That is, one can know beforehand the possibility and in some cases even the actuality of what is going to happen. Then there are thought images. We think. Somebody else thinks. Now, whether it is my thought or your thought, before the psychic eye there are these images coming. So it is not in the form of thoughts and ideas that one understands or grasps. Images come. Whether the images have been originated in me or in another, that is a thing which again the psychic discrimination points out. And one has to develop that art of sifting, knowing what things are going from me outside and what things are coming from outside to me. One can see a crowd of thoughts in you, a crowd of thoughts in me, but there is also such a thing as a mass of thoughts in the atmosphere, universal atmosphere. They don't belong to anybody in particular now. Somebody may have thought some time back, somebody may be thinking somewhere else, but those thoughts float in the atmosphere, and the person who has thought may have forgotten about it. Now all these two or three categories of thoughts, categories of thought images, they are present to the psychic sight, and one needs a good deal of patient discrimination to find out which are what. Similarly, the psychic sense puts us in touch with the psychic part of others as also of things, not merely of human beings, even of things, what are called immaterial things, material things. Those also are connected, because behind even the most material thing, there is a psychic element. On earth, there is a psychic presence. So my psychic sense lands upon that psychic element, whether it is in a human being or in a material thing, knows it, establishes connection with it, enters into some sort of identity with it, and knows it. And if one knows, one can also influence it to move, to function in a particular direction. All that depends upon the strength of the will that one has. And this applies not only to our physical plane, but also to the other planes. The psychic sense can get into touch with things and beings and forces of all the planes of existence. And the gradation of planes, the number of worlds on each plane, these are a fact. And as one, the psychic sense grows, there is a greater awareness of these planes and the goings on these planes, and as knowledge increases, ipso facto, the power given by knowledge also increases, and we get control over even things in the other planes. This leads to the awakening of the mind as the sixth sense. Mind is called the sixth sense, but in our usual day-to-day life, mind is content to be a slave of the five senses. But as mind gets developed, as the pressure of the psychic consciousness tells upon the mind, the original character of the mind as the sixth sense comes to the front, and through the mind one can contact, through the mind sense, one can contact others. Now to contact others, what purpose does it serve? We contact others through the physical senses. Is it not enough? There are aspects of life where it is not enough. Particularly in matters of spiritual life, yoga, this contacting of somebody else through the spiritual, through the mind, mental sense or the psychic sense, for a spiritual purpose, is an important part of the spiritual tradition. The master always has this contact with his disciple. He may or may not have physical contact, physical means of contact. He may be here and the disciple may be 500 miles away, or even here the master may be sitting there, the disciple may be somewhere else, there may not be any communication. The man may not know English to write to them. But with this inner sense, the psychic sense, or the mind as the sixth sense, there is a continuous communication. They know, the teacher knows what is going on. The teacher exerts his influence, his will. By the sheer act of will, sheer act of thinking, he can reach out to the disciple and influence him, make him do things as he would want. Apart from that, it helps in arriving at a mastery of ourselves. As things stand, we are aware of hardly 1/10 of ourselves. All the rest of us is either behind the curtain, or below the awakened level, or above. Somebody compared that we are like the tip of an iceberg, with so much of it behind the veil. Now, this awakening of the psychic sense, or the mental sense, helps us to know ourselves more intimately and acquire control over the movements which are normally behind our veil. Also, the various planes of our own being are opened up. Images appear which are seized by the inner sense, maybe a world, maybe an image, maybe a figure, which has a certain potency. Now those images, those words, are communicated to the physical mind by the inner awakened sense, and they become springs, as it were, or steps to cross over into the realm of the superconscious. A mantra, a form in the Indian tradition, there are what are called Dhyanamurtis. That is, before you invoke, before you meditate, there is a certain form. It is given in a verse. The particular deity is in this position, standing on a lotus, having two eyes or three eyes, four hands or two hands, like that. Right from top to toe, they give a description in one verse. Now that has to be visualized. And once that is visualized, a contact is established with the Divine through that particular revealed aspect. Originally they may meditate upon that form for a minute or two, but thereafter something else takes up the movement. Similarly in mantra, when one starts repeating, unless one does it very mechanically, the very utterance of the word creates a power, releases a dynamism, and particularly if the mantra has been communicated by a guru, then along with the mantra, there is the guru's spiritual power accompanying it. And they start vibrating, and the transition becomes easy from the human to the next higher or deeper level. Now all these reveal themselves in their true aspects when the psychic sense is open. Like the physical sense, the vital sense, the psychic sense also is but an instrument. It is not the final goal. The psychic sense has to operate through the mind, through the other instruments. And there is the possibility, why the possibility? The certainty of dilution. Man being a mental being, even the psychic, when it is opened, it has to present itself and in its intimations through the mind. And there is the possibility of error. There is always the certainty of coming down in consciousness. But this is prevented once the psychic itself is subjected to the transformation by the supramental force. Now, can the psychic be transformed, you would ask? Sri Aurobindo says, yes. The psychic being also is to be subjected to the working of the supramental consciousness and force. And when it is so uplifted, elevated and changed in terms of the supramental, it becomes what he calls the suprapsychic being. The suprapsychic being. And when that takes place, when the supramental consciousness suffuses the psychic consciousness, one gets a spontaneous unity with the universal mind. There is unity with the universal psychic. One becomes an individual with a universalized consciousness and a universalized sense. The fact of being universalized stresses that one is aware of both one and the many, with the result that the fragmentariness of experience is removed. One doesn't feel an experience separate from various other experiences, severely individual, aloof from others. Similarly, the experience of the psychic thing being somewhat abnormal, not normal, that goes. There is nothing abnormal thereafter in psychic sight, in psychic hearing, because it becomes natural and falls into peace in the general pattern. There is no abnormality about it. And last comes, after the sense, the change of substance. It is not enough, he says, if there is a change of consciousness. There should be a change of the stuff of consciousness. That is, the ether on which or in which the consciousness functions. That too must be changed. The physical leads to the psychic. The psychic leads to the supramental transformation. And when this is done, the infinite consciousness acts through the universalized individual. That is, there is the unity between the individual, the universal, and the transcendent. The supramental sense, the supramental consciousness does not depend upon our physical senses, though it may use the physical senses. It may use them as a starting point. But even without those physical senses, without our physical seeing or hearing or going and touching, the supramental consciousness can get direct knowledge, direct perception, and wield a spontaneous power which is yielded by such a knowledge. Thus you see that is the point that I forgot to make. Once the psychic consciousness or the psychic sense awakes, maybe as a result of discipline, maybe as a result of sadhana, or maybe as a result of sheer grace, or an impact of a powerful spiritual personality, it wakes up. And then you start seeing things, hearing things, and Sri Aurobindo says, that they look so vivid that there is almost a physical organization. There is not only a materialization. Materialization means things what are not there, you just see them, and afterwards they are no more there. But he says it is an almost breakthrough into the physical scene. A materialization which is almost physical. Then one thinks that things are really there. Now this has always... It has always intrigued me for the last 20 or 25 years, ever since I read that book. There is the autobiography of a yogi by Swami Yoganand, which has become a bestseller. I had to read it for purposes of a review some 25 years ago. And there he describes how he is guru or guru's guru. A new world appeared, beautiful buildings, people with different dress, people could see and communicate, all in a manner, in a scheme that is totally new, which is not possible on this in this world. Now how could it be? And they describe pages after pages, and then after a few moments, the whole thing disappears, and the person finds himself very warm. But the vividity of that experience continues, and it is real, or perhaps more real to him than what is happening on the physical plane. How is that possible? I had long thought that it must be happening somewhere in the subtle physical, and the persons think that it has happened here. But in this chapter, Sri Aurobindo explains such phenomena that they are materializations, in a special sense, of things that are happening elsewhere. Our own physical contributions may enter, but by and large, they are happening somewhere, and they are projected in the earth atmosphere. So you can't say they are not true. You can't say they are true in the sense in which we understand it either. Point is, there is a mix-up of two planes of existence. The plane where a person normally lives and functions, the plane where those things happen. And when they are mixed, this person thinks that all those things are there. But they are not there on the physical plane, they are elsewhere. So, when people, readers, think that these are all imaginations, they are wrong. When we think that all these things are there somewhere, organized only we do not see, that is also not true. They are organized in another world, but by circumstances, or by will, or for some cosmic purpose, they are precipitated into the earth atmosphere and one experience. And if at that time there are other people around the person who experiences, they also can participate in that vision. Not one, but others. For that moment, their other faculties are suspended. They are under that spell, as it were, and they also see those things. All this is a result of the awakening of the inner sense, the psychic sense, the spiritual faculties or the latent faculties. They put us in touch with what is happening in other planes. What is happening in the on the physical plane itself, beyond the range normally accessible to us, what is happening elsewhere in other planes. And the whole thing passes before the mind as on a cinematographic screen. And when those things happen, it looks as if only those things are real, and what is going on earth is illusory, relatively false. But that is again an exaggeration. Each thing is true on its plane. The only thing that is true on all planes is the divine consciousness and the divine truth. Everything else is a formation, everything else is a manifestation, real in the setting in which it is manifest.
When somebody is psychic opening his bed, he can see certain things. How did that myself, if I am shut up, how can I see? How can I experience the experience? You see, the man is psychic. How did he
now,
see me?
The question is, if one does not have the faculty of seeing things which are seeable, when the psychic sense is awake, what should one do to see them? The answer would depend upon the person who asks it. Because if one is a spiritual seeker, the answer would be, how does it help your spiritual growth or progress to see things which you do not normally see? It may satisfy your curiosity, but how does it help the growth of spiritual consciousness? But if one is not a seeker, but if one is a seeker of knowledge, wants to expand his mind, add to the knowledge, fund of knowledge that he has, say a scientist, well, one has to undergo a psychological discipline to exert pressure, to exert will, and slowly but steadily enlarge the area of awareness. We are, as I said, aware of only a small portion of ourselves. We should exert our will and take every occasion to extend the area of our awareness, that is, enlarge our consciousness. Either you enlarge your consciousness, or by concentration, deepen your consciousness. In either case, you must break through the barriers of the surface consciousness. And then, if you have that will, that psychic center responds, and those things start blossoming.
Can you give one hint at least, how to awaken?
No. That hint will be self-evident once you go beyond the physical awareness. We live in the physical realm. Our consciousness must be enlarged so that you feel normally one with others. May not be the whole world, but still the large number of people around you. You feel one. You feel one with their thoughts. Or you must go inside so that you touch something of the soul. You have that sense of permanence, of immutable peace, Nothing can disturb. Neither death nor accident can have any fear. You don't have fear of them. When you touch that layer of consciousness within, or break across the walls, then things are evident to you. Where you have to will, whether you want to see, whether you want to feel, whether you want to hear. You can hear, you can see, you can feel. Any of these things, you have only to have a will. Because I say a will because the will acts as a button. And your consciousness is no more your surface physical consciousness. It is in touch with the subliminal or larger universal consciousness. There is an automatic response, which is not possible as long as we live confined to the physical consciousness, normal state of awareness. It is of that type, but there is always a possibility of error because of the mental, it has to be translated in the mental terms. Essentially, knowledge by identity is the same, whether it is on the physical level, mental or whatever it is. But the completeness of it, the infallibility of it, they are possible only there. When the supramental faculties come into operation.
May I ask a question on a different subject?
Time? Another case.